We've been talking about spiritual exercise and the instruction that the Apostle Paul gave to Timothy. And as we've thought about spiritual exercise, we've thought about it as what you do in the gymnasium to get ready to go into the Olympic Games. And the Olympic Games are really the goal for much of what they did in the gymnasium was just to prepare for the Olympic Games. And sometimes when we talk about spiritual exercise, it's really, really easy to see that kind of transition. We talked a little bit last week about meditation. And it's pretty easy to see that meditation, at least when it's a discursive, when it's an analytic, logical way of looking at the things that God has given us, is something that prepares us for something else. It informs our life. It tells us how we live. It informs the way that we interact with other people. It gives us the knowledge and the skills that we need, the information that we need to teach other people and to let them know about Jesus and about the wonderful things that we have found in Him. So when we talk about meditation, it's real easy to see that there are some things we do in the gym and some things that we do when we actually get to the Olympic Games. Now this morning, we're going to take that one step further and we're going to talk about prayer. Now when we talk about prayer, it's not quite so easy to see that you have practice and then you have what you do in the Olympic Games, or what you do when you're really informing life and you're really talking with other people and you're really praying to God. It's not as if prayer is somehow practice for prayer. Prayer that we do in private is not practice for what we do in public. Although, it's pretty obvious when people pray a lot in private that when they come into a public arena, and they pray aloud so that we get to hear it, like Mark did this morning. It's pretty obvious that Mark has spent a lot of time talking to God about different things because of the way that he prays when he comes into the public arena. So understand that we're going to talk about prayer as spiritual exercise, and we're going to emphasize some things this morning. I don't mean to de-emphasize the commands that were given to pray, but I want you to think about spiritual exercise as it relates to prayer this morning. And the best way to think about prayer and spiritual exercise is to think about the habits that we see in other godly men. Let me stop here for just a second and tell you that my wife helped me with the slides this morning. That's pretty obvious because you've seen the way that I dress. I have a white shirt and a black print. So Kim has told me that I can make my slides more engaging if I'll put some background color on them. If I get them to the point where you can't read them, and it's probably likely that I'll do that, if it gets hard to read, let me know, and I'll work with that. But try to make these slides as engaging as they can be. Hopefully they won't detract from what I'm trying to say. So let's think about the habits of some godly men. The first one that we'll think about is David. If you were to go back and read about David in Psalms, in about Psalms 55, and beginning there in about verse 17, he says, "Evening, morning, and at noon, I will complain and murmur, and he will hear my voice." Now, you know that he's talking about prayer by reading the entire context there in Psalms 55. But what David is saying is, I express myself to God, and I do it frequently, morning, evening, noon, more than just praying before I eat a meal. More than just praying before I go to sleep at night. Look at Daniel. Daniel, the 6th chapter, verse 10. Everybody's familiar with the story of Daniel, how Nebuchadnezzar was forced or cajoled, I guess is a better term, into making a law that would make it illegal for people to continue to practice the long practice that they had had of worshiping the true God. Daniel, of course, one of the captives down there in Babylon, or up in Babylon. And Daniel, it says, when he learned about the law that Nebuchadnezzar had made, continued to pray. He'd been doing that all along, and he continued to pray. Daniel, the 6th chapter, verse 10, it says, when Daniel knew that the document was signed, he entered into his house. Now, his roof chamber, in his roof chamber, he had windows open toward Jerusalem, and he continued kneeling on his knees 3 times a day, praying, giving thanks before his God, as he had been doing previously. So Daniel just continued to do what he'd always been doing. That makes sense. Look at a woman named Anna. She's not a person that just really stands out to us. She's sort of a background person who is in the background as the story of Jesus' birth is told. Story of his early childhood. In Luke, the 2nd chapter, it says, there was a prophetess. Her name was Anna. She was the daughter of Phanuel of the tribe of Asher. She was advanced in years, had lived with her husband 7 years after after her marriage. And then, as a widow, to the age of 84, she never left the temple, serving night and day with fastings and prayers. She reminds me of, remember we talked last week about an anchoress? She kind of reminds me of a person who is like that. But she continued night and day in prayer, never left the temple. Think about the widows that are described in 1 Timothy, the 5th chapter, and at verse 5. And when the Apostle Paul is talking to Timothy about those that were widows indeed, those people that the church was going to help with their support, he says, now she who is a widow indeed, who has been left alone, has fixed her hope on God and continues in entreaties and prayers night and day. So when you look at godly people that are described, and you think about their habits, this is what they did. This was their spiritual exercise as it relates specifically to prayer. And then there's one more that I want you to look at. I want you to think about the man Epaphras. We don't know a whole lot about Epaphras, that he worked with the Apostle Paul. He was apparently close to him. But in Colossians, the 4th chapter, at verse 12, it says this about Epaphras. He is one of your number, a bond slave of Jesus Christ. He sends you his greetings, always laboring earnestly for you in his prayers. Laboring earnestly. Some other translations have struggling for you in his prayers. Prayer was a big part of Epaphras' life. And it was so important to him that he approached God on behalf of those that he was not with at the time, that the Apostle Paul called it laboring earnestly. Now, I don't know about you. I have never worked hard enough in a prayer to break a sweat. But that's something that probably characterized Epaphras. Now I want to go on from here just a little bit, and I want to think about prayer as spiritual exercise. And I want to do that by thinking about something else. I want to think about health for just a minute. I've told you that I'm a cardiac patient. I had a heart attack in 1992 and had bypass surgery on my birthday in 1992. So I know a little bit about the way that people approach generally cardiac health, or at least I know a little bit about the way that I approach cardiac health. Every time I would go to my cardiologist, he would tell me, Dean, you need to be thinking about preventing problems. Now, I'm not very good at that. I ate a bad diet. My idea of lunch was a half a gallon of milk and a family pack of Oreo cookies. The whole thing. Okay. I don't eat Oreos, just a little bit. But that, I can tell you that that is not a healthy way to approach cardiac health. I need to be thinking about doing some things that would help me instead of taking a crisis approach to cardiac health, which is what I did. Let me show you where my crisis approach to cardiac health wound up. What did I do? That's where it wound up. That's the crisis approach to thinking about what cardiologists do. When everything gets really bad and it's all falling apart, then I go to see the doctor, and the doctor works his magic and he fixes it for me. And I have to tell you, that rings true with the approach that I slip into when it comes to prayer. Prayer becomes a crisis event. I talk to God, I explain to Him what the problem is, and God fixes it. I don't think that's the best approach to prayer. I know it's not the best approach to cardiac health. If you think about cardiac health, the best approach is to probably control what you eat. Now, I'm really fortunate because I like to eat salmon. I love to eat fish of all kinds, but a lot of people don't. And because they don't like to eat fish, they continue to eat those things that they shouldn't eat, and I still eat those. But I like to take a preventive approach. So a preventive approach to cardiac health, or a wellness approach to cardiac health, means that I do this every day. I don't wait until a crisis arises and they have to call the ambulance, and the ambulance takes me to the Providence Hospital where they admit me and they do bypass surgery. I was never so happy in my life as I was the day that I had a heart attack at Northway Mall, and they called my wife and she came down to the mall where I was laying on the floor. The ambulance folks were working on me, the EMTs. And I tell you, I was never so grateful to see her as I was at that time, because they kept asking my name and I couldn't remember it. That's not the approach to prayer. Don't wait to get to the point that you can't remember what your name is, the crisis is that bad, and then you want God to fix it, because that's not what prayer is. So if I'm going to take a non-critical approach to prayer, how can I exercise myself and help myself do more of that kind of praying? Now, remember, I said that this illustration is going to break down a little bit because it's not quite as clear as it is with meditation. But how am I going to use prayer as an exercise? What can I do? Now, as I was thinking about this, it occurred to me that I could look at what Jesus said about prayer. And that's, of course, probably one of the first places that we ought to begin.
So Jesus talks about some things that ought to characterize our prayer. The first thing that Jesus said was, pray in secret. Go into your closet, and when you're in your closet, pray in secret. Don't pray in front of other people. Then we're familiar with Matthew 6 and the instruction that Jesus gives there in Matthew 6. We don't want to be like the Pharisees, because they pray out in the public square. They want people to know that they're praying. So Jesus says, pray in secret. How do I exercise that way? Find a time when you can be in secret, just you and God, and express your thoughts to Him. He also said, keep it simple. When he talked about the Pharisees, remember what he said? They think they'll be heard for their much speaking. They like to use big words. So he says, keep it simple. Pray and just speak to God. You're not trying to impress Him. He's probably not impressed with anything I can do, I'm pretty sure. So there's no real reason for me to try to impress Him. I can keep it simple. Next thing He says is, realize that your Father already knows what you're going to ask. So it's not as if we're somehow revealing information to God. And so I can exercise myself by remembering that God already knows. And then finally, Jesus says, and Paul illustrates for us, pray steadfastly. You remember the woman who had a prayer that she wanted to bring to the magistrate, a concern that she wanted to bring to the magistrate, and she prayed and prayed and prayed and prayed and prayed and prayed, and finally he gave in. I don't think that's what we're doing. I don't think we're wearying God with our prayer, but I do think that we need to pray on a regular basis, and that's part of the exercise of prayer. Praying steadfastly. And then finally, I want you to think about this. It may be possible for us to avoid a crisis mentality by praying in non-requesting ways. There's not really something that we need to fix. We're not asking God to step into the crisis and make it so that everything now works. Instead, we're focusing on the things that we need to talk to God about that don't involve a crisis. Engage in thanksgiving. This is a good time to think about that, right? Engage in thanksgiving. 1 Thessalonians, the 5th chapter. We pray and we always give thanks. I know that I'm not the best at giving thanks. I tend to focus on giving thanks for a specific thing. I need to give thanks to God. I need to be better at that. So I can focus on thanksgiving prayers, not thanksgiving like the holiday. I can focus on thanksgiving prayers when I'm not asking God for anything. That gets me away from the crisis, and it reminds me that this is a wellness approach. The next thing that I can do is I can just express praise to God for who He is, for what He has done. First Chronicles. If you go back and you look at Old Testament history and the prophets' approach to history, the prophets tend to stress the times when the king, for one reason or another,
was expressing praise to God. And so you find these wonderful praise prayers that don't have any request that's attached to them. Again, probably something that I need to work on. Have you ever tried praying to God by praying a psalm? A lot of those don't have anything to do with a request. It's just recognizing who God is. I've wondered how a man like Job would have prayed to God and give him praise in the midst of all of the things that was going on in his life. What am I doing wrong? And then we can seek out service opportunities. Colossians, the fourth chapter. Pray not for yourself, not making a request that you would like to have filled, but praying that God will open the floor so that you can be of service to someone else. Ask God for help. Not that we're seeking something for ourselves, but we're seeking to be helpful to others. So, in conclusion then, I think there's a sense in which we can make prayer spiritual exercise. I think we need to approach prayer from a wellness model and not from a crisis model. Don't wait to pray until it's all broken and you need God to step in and fix it the way I did with that cardiologist. I'm not going to do anything until it gets so bad that I'll come and see you and you'll go in and fix all the plumbing. That's not the best way to approach cardiology. It's not the best way to approach health and wellness, and it's probably not the best way to approach prayer. And one of the ways that we can help ourselves to avoid praying only when there's a problem is to express thanks, to express praise, to ask for opportunities for us to be of service. So, hopefully that'll help you. It's a good time to think about giving thanks, isn't it? And I next week, because I didn't want to do it this week, next week we're going to talk about the spiritual exercise of fasting. See, I do pay attention to what's going on. You know, we're all going to have opportunities to give thanks this week. And if you're here and you want to have a relationship with God that tends to be a wellness kind of relationship, if you start thinking about your life and it seems like it's been kind of crisis mode, we want to help you to have a wellness relationship with God. We can pray with you. We can pray for you. If there's sin that you need to be free of, the apostle said, confess your faults one to another, pray one for another that you may be healed. And the reason for that is, he said, the effectual fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. If you've never established that relationship with God, these spiritual exercises are not what's going to establish the relationship. You establish the relationship in baptism. Remember, just running on a treadmill is not what makes you an exerciser. So if you've never established a relationship, let's establish the relationship today, and then let's keep strengthening the relationship with the spiritual exercises. We can baptize you this morning. Say something to someone you dismissed. Raise your hand while we're singing the song. Come down to the front. Just somehow let somebody know that we can help in any possible way. But let's think about it while we stand and we sing the song together.